chaos at the Capitol. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, it was a dark day for this nation as pro-Trump extremists stormed the U.S. House and Senate, aided and abetted by the president and some elected representatives. Give us a call as we discuss last night's extraordinary scene. It's 549-2937. But first this hour, a quick update on the pandemic in Florida. With 17,783 new cases in the state and 129 new deaths, the cumulative number of cases in Florida now tops 1.4 million. The death toll stands at 22,317. Well, early this morning, Congress certified President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris's victory, marking the end of a long day and night marred by chaos and violence in the nation's capital. Despite the violent insurrection of Trump supporters who stormed the People's House, all but two Florida representatives still raised objections to Biden's certification in some fashion. Among those objectors was local Congressman John Rutherford. Meanwhile, the Senate overwhelmingly turned aside a challenge to President-elect Biden's victory in Arizona. Now, we want to talk about this in a moment, but first let's listen to Tampa Democratic Congresswoman Kathy Castor, who was in lockdown in the House office building when the mob assaulted the Capitol. She called it a grotesque spectacle.
Yeah, Trump's whole presidency has been something that you scoffed at. Oh, certainly that would never have made it into a novel. It's just unbelievable. But here at the end, what he's just focused on, destruction himself. He has to be the center of attention, and the Constitution in this country be damned, and he will go down in history as an utter disgrace.
Castor and other Democrats in the House are calling for impeachment or the 25th Amendment to remove the president. We begin the hour with an examination of last night's extraordinary events. Times Union columnist Nate Monroe has been writing about them, and he joins us now. Hi, Nate.
Hi, Melissa.
Always good to have you on the show. And everyone, let us know your thoughts about the violent insurrection we witnessed last night at the Capitol in Washington. It's 549-2937 to join us. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Nate, Senator Marco Rubio did not vote to raise objections to the election. Senator Rick Scott did. And two other local lawmakers raised objections, including our representative, John Rutherford, the former sheriff of Jacksonville. He called for objections to the certification of the Electoral College tally. Then, as the rioting began, he tweeted that the lawlessness taking place in the Capitol is unacceptable and un-American. You have a lot to say about Rutherford and his colleagues in the House and Senate, who critics say fanned the flames of this insurrection by refusing to tell the truth to their constituents, which is that it was a free and fair election and that the electoral count was done in accordance with state election laws, and there was no evidence of fraud that would have changed the result.
Right. It was sort of rich in a way to hear Rutherford and some of his Republican colleagues condemn the violence, because I'm not sure what else they really expected to happen. I mean, he has sort of breathed life into lies that the presidential election was stolen. And lo and behold, it turns out that a lot of people happened to believe him and his colleagues and the president that the election was stolen, and they proceeded to act accordingly. If you think the election was stolen, then if you truly believe that, then storming the Capitol might actually fit into the realm of a reasonable way to respond. And that's what those people did. And so, for Rutherford and his colleagues, and, you know, he has since on a couple of the morning news shows disclaimed any responsibility that he might have for fanning the flames, and that's not surprising. you know, it's shameful. And he is not fit for the office that he holds. It's especially egregious that he is a former sheriff, one of the few former sheriffs, or maybe the only one in Congress. He is someone who was supposed to know better. And I think that the John Rutherford of a decade ago would not have engaged in this kind of, you know, the sort of petty but very high stakes game. And it's just disappointing.
This morning, Representative Rutherford tweeted just a few minutes ago, "Our constitutional process of debating the state electors is now complete, and Joe Biden is certified as the next president. Congratulations to him and Vice President-elect Harris. I pray for them as they lead our great country." Rutherford was joined on the Republican side of the aisle by Florida Representatives Kat Kamick, Mario Diaz-Balart, Byron Donalds, Neil Dunn, Scott Franklin, Matt Gaetz, Carlos Jimenez, Brian Mast, Bill Posey, Greg Stube, and Dan Webster. Representative Michael Waltz of the Palm Coast area changed his mind and did not object to certifying the election results. Representative Vern Buchanan of Sarasota was the only other Florida Republican in the House to vote in favor of certifying the election results, and he issued a statement, Nate, condemning the riots. So only two members of Florida's Republican delegation were in favor of certification. The rest objected, and as many pundits and analysts have pointed out, raised objections even though they know that the claims of fraud were baseless. President Trump's own attorney general, outgoing Attorney General Bill Barr, and his Justice Department asserted as such. Dozens of judges across the country, including Trump-appointed judges, threw out claims of fraud or malfeasance in state elections because there was just no evidence of it. And so it's just simply extraordinary to see so many of our elected representatives in this state who enabled this unbelievable scene that we witnessed yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sobering thing is to realize that there, we can talk about John Rutherford, but there are like 138 John Rutherfords around the country who engaged in this dangerous kind of ploy. I mean, the House of Representatives proved itself to be a uniquely damaged governing body. You know, the Senate overwhelmingly certified the election results, and, you know, the holdouts of a few embarrassments like Ted Cruz and Florida's own Rick Scott notwithstanding, you know, the Senate proved to be a much more sane, deliberative body. It is in the House of Representatives where some of these members hold districts that are extremely uncompetitive. You know, John Rutherford will never face a competitive Democratic challenger for his district. And it's not because there aren't good challengers. It's because the way the district is drawn, the registration numbers are just overwhelmingly lopsided. A rock that was registered Republican could carry that seat.
It wouldn't have taken a lot of political courage for Congressman Rutherford to tell his constituents the truth. He isn't in danger of losing his seat, as you say. Last night on the Senate floor, Senator Mitt Romney drew widespread applause when he told his colleagues that the best thing you can do for your constituents is tell them the truth. Be honest about how this election played out. The pro-Trump extremists who stormed the Capitol yesterday did so under the mistaken belief that something was wrong or rigged with the election because the president and the representatives were not honest with them.
Right. And, you know, that's Rutherford's defense today is that, you know, he objected because in the specific states in Georgia and in Michigan and in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, these legislatures, you know, enacted rules for the way the election's supposed to go, and these state bureaucrats changed them, and that's illegal in Rutherford's mind. And let's set aside the fact that this happens in a lot of states, including Florida. Legislatures do not always set the final rules for an election to take place. And let's set aside the fact that his interest is only in states that Biden won and only in states that provided Biden the winning margin of victory. It just defies belief that he really thought that objecting to those results would prompt a very sober debate about, you know, the plenary authority of legislatures, as opposed to sparking what it did instead, which was riots. I mean, it just defies belief, and it just reeks of bad faith. And again, Rutherford being a former lawman, someone who locked people up for committing crimes, to have engaged in this dangerous behavior and to have, whether he intended it or not, abetted, you know, one of the most shameful days in recent memory, is, you know, it's just outrageous.
Lots of calls as we discussed last night's riots at the Capitol. Mark is in Murray Hill. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Yeah, could you imagine if this crowd of people that rushed the Capitol yesterday were black? I mean, the air would have been full of rubber bullets and tear gas in no time. Instead, because the crowd was white, they were given this deference, and they were allowed to linger around for hours and hours and hours as if they were tourists on vacation. This is just a pitiful day for all of us. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Mark. And we've received lots of tweets and emails pointing out that the insurrectionists were so easily able to breach the People's House, Nate. And video has emerged showing Capitol Police taking selfies with them, opening the door for some of them. I don't think it would be a surprise to see an investigation of the Capitol Police and their handling of this. The Capitol Police is about the size of the JSO. It's like the size of a medium-sized city police force, and it's until last night was widely respected for the tight security it keeps at the Capitol. And so for Black Americans, seeing how these protesters were treated, it was a very different scene than what we have seen at some of the summer protests that were focused around the Black Lives Matter movement. A very different scene.
It was a very different scene, and I think it is very understandable that people are asking that question. It seems, certainly to my mind, if social activists had gotten this out of hand in that close proximity to the Capitol, I would have found it unbelievable that the police wouldn't have just resorted to lethal force much earlier. It's unbelievable. I have been to the Capitol one time for a work-related project, and when my colleague and I were there, we were counseled at length ahead of time by a former reporter who had worked in D.C. about how to act around the D.C., or I'm sorry, around the Capitol Police. And we were counseled to be especially cautious about, you know, even the simple act of trying to question a member of Congress who may not want to talk to us, you know, we were told even that can get you in trouble if you're not careful. The place was ridiculously locked down, super secured, super policed. And as I think back on that small experience, seeing what happened yesterday is just unbelievable. Like, it's unbelievable that, you know, there were pictures of, you know, some of these clowns loafing in the House Speaker's office chair, and taking mail out of her office, and, you know, the later mm-hmm. pictures that some of these goons were just kind of escorted out the door. I mean, if the goal of law enforcement is to avoid the appearance of a double standard, they certainly, among other failures yesterday, failed to do that.
We have heard that the Capitol Police was simply overrun by so many people storming the Capitol building. But yes, I mean, these were very disturbing images that we all witnessed On Facebook, James writes, to my elected representatives and other Florida GOP representatives, you do not get to rebuke yesterday's attempted coup after fully supporting the instigator and the buildup to it, he writes. Blake writes, I think the civil unrest should continue until we have irrefutable, verifiable voter ID and a way to audit each election. Blake, with respect, the elections were audited. Recounts in swing states did occur, and they were lawfully certified. There is no evidence of widespread fraud. Susan writes, why were some of the people that illegally entered the Capitol escorted out instead of arrested? Will the FBI use digital imaging posts on social media to arrest them later? Bonnie writes, the only way we can salvage our global reputation is to quickly remove Trump from office using the 25th Amendment and act quickly to arrest any and all identified as participating in the coup. Susan also writes, don't forget one Trump supporter was shot and killed. There is one reported death from last night's riot at the Capitol date. Actually, there are four deaths now that have been documented. Last night was violent. So we have not had a peaceful, for the first time really, almost since the nation has been founded, we'll leave aside the Civil War. We have not had a peaceful transfer of power in the United States of America. Four people are dead.
Yeah, and what's really striking about that, and you know, other reporters noticed this last night, or noted it last night, and it's another failure on law enforcement's part. In a functional world, there would have been some sort of news conference explaining what happened and explaining the circumstances around some of these deaths. I mean, we know just shockingly little about the circumstances, you know, particularly the woman who was shot in the Capitol building. I mean, there is just no information about that available aside from, you know, an extremely hard to view video. I mean, it's, we have heard from no one in a top law enforcement position about any of this, nothing about their plans, no reassurances that things are under control, no one to answer questions. I mean, it's just, I mean, it is just almost third world.
Javon is on the line. Javon, go ahead.
Yes.
Hi, Javon, you're on the air.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Three quick points. Number one, the rioters that showed up at the Capitol had pipe bombs and Molotov cocktails and what looked like the zip ties used as handcuffs. So those people showed up with some serious intentions. More importantly, we've been warned for years that far-right, white-wing, white nationalist organizations are the greatest threat to America, outstripping any foreign enemy, and we saw that on full display. But ultimately, the fault for why this happened lies with electors like elected officials like Rutherford, a former sheriff who stood by and watched crimes being committed and then voted for the very things that caused that riot to happen, but also every quote-unquote well-meaning Republican who chose party over country, who stood by and voted for Trump the first time and probably voted for Trump the second time, even though they may have said, oh, you know, he's not my guy, but I've got to support the party. At some point, you got to have a backbone. At some point, we as a nation have to stand up and say that we are not going to allow fringe elements that want to violently destroy this country to participate in our democracy, which they don't respect.
Javon, thank you. You know, I go back to the book Profiles in Courage, Nate. It was allegedly written by President Kennedy, although he didn't really write the book. But it was about people in public life who take principled stands and defy their own party, who do the right thing. Mitt Romney is the sole Republican who throughout this process has defied his party and chose the country. He voted for impeachment at the beginning of this year, and he has consistently been honest with his constituents about this presidency and these events. He's the only Republican in the Senate, and there are precious few in the House who have done this.
Well, and I think it's important to keep in perspective when we talk about political courage, and you had mentioned this earlier that, you know, Rutherford is never in danger of losing his seat. That's what we're talking about. That the worst thing that will happen to these people is that they just don't get reelected, which really shouldn't be that big a deal. You know, Rutherford does not need this job. If he were to lose reelection, it should just not be that consequential an issue for him. But, you know, apparently that is more important to him than the, you know, maintaining the integrity of our republic. You know, what we asked for from our elected officials is really not that much. But, you know, the professionalization of politics has just become such that, you know, some of these buffoons cannot imagine life outside of elected office. You know, Matt Gaetz is one of the, Florida Panhandle congressman who has been one of the most vocal agitators in the Capitol. And, you know, this is a guy who fits every definition of a career politician you can imagine. I mean, I think that's a huge problem. You know, the courage that we're asking for is really not, it's not the courage that we're asking people who serve in the military and in law enforcement and first responders and in the pandemic, our essential
not physical
workers,
courage,
they
political courage.
More, yeah. Yeah, they're facing much more harrowing circumstances than someone like John Rutherford, who just needs to show up and, you know, really just fulfill a ceremonial role.
And so I
think that's important.
Yeah, and let's be clear, this goes for both parties. We may well see a time in this country when an extreme situation affects elected Democrats who do not do the right thing. This is a bipartisan problem in the sense that people get addicted to power. And they, as you said, they get addicted to their office and the perks that come with it and their future political ambitions. Neil is in Ortega. Hi, Neil. Go ahead.
Community action issue right now, because we know John Rutherford willingly peddled lies, incited sedition, signed on to the Texas brief that was rejected as bogus by the Supreme Court. And he is a sheriff when he was sheriff. Don't we have to reexamine all the police killings that took place higher than at any time in the history of the city of Jacksonville while it was under his administration? Here's someone who's willing to lie, trick the public, falsify, incite sedition, falsify information. This is a call for community action to have an independent investigation of his tenure as sheriff. Thank you.
Neil, thanks for that. I doubt that will happen. I appreciate the background you provided on that. Lots of calls. Meanwhile, Ed in Clay County. Good morning, Ed. Go ahead, Ed.
Oh, yes. Hi. I think we need to, first of all, kind of stick to facts. The gentleman who called in about the pipe bombs and Molotov cocktails found during the demonstration, I believe the Florida Times Union can verify there is no news on that. They did find a pipe bomb and was
actually there is Ed. There is the pipe bombs found at both the Republican and Democratic headquarters.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to bring up. But that, to my knowledge, it was not part of the demonstration, but it's also to the National Republican Party, by the way. Regarding the Republican congressman like Rutherford, we forget that when Trump was elected, you have plenty of Democrat Congress people, including when the certification happened, who rose to oppose them, the certification peacefully, as is their right. The problem what happened yesterday is not the demonstration that was peaceful. Is the and I believe your reporter there calls them dummies or goons, I agree with that, who broke the law by going inside the Capitol, and it looks like some policemen were hurt. Certainly they deserve the full stand of the law. It would be helpful, though, if we stick to the same premise with every demonstration that has occurred. Anybody, regardless of your cause, that you believe strongly on, I'm sure, who breaks the law, breaks into buildings, public or private, vandalized or attacked the police or anyone deserve the full stance of the law against them. And I hope
Ed, thank you. Yeah.
Everybody there can agree with that.
Thank you, Ed. And go ahead, Nate.
Let's talk about this double standard here for a moment, or the kind of both sides issue that we just heard from this caller. There have been isolated challenges to the electoral process from members of Congress in the past. Never before have those isolated challenges gotten the support of well over 100 of their colleagues.
And the sitting president.
Never have those challenges, they've never been backed by the president. A mob has never been directly incited to storm the Capitol by the president. There's a lot of comparison to the protests over the summer about criminal justice reform. I'm not aware of anyone in power, anyone in the Democratic Party, who endorsed the destruction of businesses and who didn't condemn rioting. I mean, that is just a red herring issue. It has nothing to do with what happened yesterday. What we are talking about is the peaceful transfer of power. I mean, it is the backbone of our entire system of government that was willingly upended by the president and this kind of merry band of sycophants in the House of Representatives. Nothing like that has happened before. There is no equivalent. The isolated challenges that Democrats have made in the past have actually been shut down by the vice presidents who either lost those elections themselves or,
John Kerry and
preferred outcome.
John Kerry and Joe Biden, right? So yes, it is.
Al Gore and Joe Biden had to preside over. They had to preside over the certification of results that they did not want.
You know,
and it was fine.
The repercussions from this are only beginning to be felt, but here's one right off the bat. American Airlines will no longer serve alcohol on flights to and from Washington, D.C., because flight attendants this week were forced to confront aggressive passengers that were headed to this riot at the Capitol. There is so much that will be flowing out of this horrible day. We can only begin, I think, to imagine the long-term reverberations of what happened in Washington yesterday. But as always, I appreciate your thoughts and your participation on this program. Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union, thank you so much for joining us.
Melissa, thanks for having me.
Always good to have your voice on the show. Well, much more coming up, meanwhile, as we move on to some other news. Later in the hour, local dad and author Dante Palmer on his new children's book and his social movement for gender parity in parenting. But up next.
This is an investment in citizens in our community that can use that support to move them into higher wage paying jobs.
$1 million donation to FSCJ for local students of color. We'll take a closer look at that next. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back. It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9. Welcome back. Well, Florida State College at Jacksonville and Bank of America have announced a new $1 million jobs initiative for local students of color. Now, this $1 million will go to help these students successfully complete their education and training necessary to enter the workforce. The initiative builds on Bank of America's ongoing work in Jacksonville to address underlying issues facing communities of color who've been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. I spoke about it with John Avendano, PhD, president at FSCJ, and Greg Smith, the Jacksonville Market President at Bank of America. Dr. Avendano, Greg Smith, good to talk to both of you. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Good morning. Exciting news for FSCJ, Florida State College at Jacksonville. In a moment, we'll hear from Dr. Avendano about how this $1 million will be used for the jobs initiative in this community. But first, Greg Smith, let me begin with you as market president for BOA here in Jacksonville. Explain, if you could, a little bit why the bank is putting its resources behind this initiative, not just in Jacksonville, but around the country.
Well, you know, this past year, there's been so much social unrest, and with the COVID virus affecting our minority communities even more harshly than the general population, we fully recognize that jobs are such a critical pillar to address the racial wealth gap in Jacksonville and around the country. So we're focusing our support on local Black African American and Hispanic Latino students in the community. And we've had a long-standing partnership with Florida State College, so it was a natural fit for us to reach out to them to put together a partnership. And we're making $1 million investment and partnering with Florida State College to help those students of color get through a certificate or a college degree in an area where there will be jobs on the other end coming out. So it's a very specific targeted program, and we're just delighted to work with Dr. Avendano and his team.
Well, Dr. Avendano, this is very exciting for FSCJ. With this $1 million donation, you say you're going to enhance existing programs to meet specific skills gaps to work on creating higher paying jobs. This will be for students of color. What are some of the programs this $1 million will enrich at FSCJ?
Yeah, absolutely. I would be remiss if I didn't start by thanking Greg Smith and Bank of America for their investment really across the entire country, but then obviously for us here at the local level, because I think that's what's critical and what's beneficial for not only the college, but for our community as a whole. And that is that this is an investment in our community, right? This is an investment in citizens in our community that need or can use that support to move them into higher wage paying jobs and have that opportunity to be strong contributors to our economy and strong contributors to our community as a whole. And so what we're looking at are programs specifically in those areas, those programs that can yield a higher wage paying type job. So programs in business and finance, we're looking at programs in healthcare. We're looking for programs that are in automation some of our career programs, career and technical education programs. So more specifically, you'll find some things in automation. We'll find some things in computer-aided design, even welding. But then also, like I said, in banking and finance and things along that nature. So those are the programs. But it's more than just enhancing the programs. It is reaching out into our communities that have really a void in them, either through access and or financial support to get into these programs and to be successful. So in addition to expanding our programs, we'll be adding the wraparound services that these students will need to be successful. And then the idea is obviously to have a job on the other end for them. And so that's our ultimate goal.
Right. I mean, Greg, this is all about jobs. This is all about getting people to work. This community, like everyone around the country, has been suffering and struggling in this pandemic, and the pain is real. You just can't even imagine how tough it's been for so many people in our area. And so if you could talk a little bit about why you're specifically focusing on community and state colleges and also HBCUs, historically Black colleges and universities, with this donation.
Yes, we identified that the state colleges, historically Black colleges, those institutions were doing already a good job in those areas of helping those students in need, those young people in need. So as we look to partner with those around the country, we just think that's the biggest opportunity to kind of move the dial. So we look forward to working with Florida State College. You know, we really think that with the partnering with our Jack's Chamber, other businesses, that we can really make a difference with helping identify the jobs. As Dr. Avendano was stating, that, you know, it's critical that we train young people in areas where there is a job need. And you know, when you look at the graduation rates for young people in the Black and Latino community, it's lower than other other groups. And by doing these type of targeted programs, we can help bring those young people into jobs more quickly.
Yeah, Dr. Avendano, what about that? According to a release from FSCJ, less than 40% of community college students earn their degree within 6 years of enrollment. For students of color, the rates are lower, 28% for Black students, 37% for Hispanic students. How will this Bank of America support, as you said, give rise to more wraparound services for kids and non-traditional older students so that they can get to the finish line, that they can get to graduation, get their certificate or their degree, and then get to work?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And so what most people are not really familiar with is that community colleges are open access institutions. And so in doing so, we provide that access, we provide that opportunity for students who normally wouldn't have that. Community colleges, if you will, with air quotes, which we are, I mean, we're a state college, but we still serve our community. We tend to find those students, we tend to serve those students who have other obstacles. They're financial obstacles, they are family obstacles, they are work obstacles, other things that kind of complicate their journey towards that ultimate goal from an education or from a training standpoint. So, and that's why you see quite often students of color having more challenges, right? Because of either they have lower wage paying jobs or financially it's a little bit more of a challenge for them. And again, this is where the beauty of the grant from Bank of America is that it's helping, it's targeting those groups to provide them kind of that hand up and that additional support that they might need. And so that's what we'll do. We're also looking towards our educational foundation to provide additional resources from a financial aid standpoint. So in essence, we're already the most affordable option that people will have. But we want to make it even more affordable, right? We want to make it to a point where a student graduates into a program, certificate, or even carry on to another degree program where there's a good wage-paying job, but also to be able to do that without any debt, right? And I think that's the key component to that. And so that's part of, you know, the wraparound services that we would be providing. We'll do this through enhanced technology that will be made available to students who might need it, especially in a time like this where the COVID is still very rampant in our community and maybe it's a little safer at home, if you will. You know, these are some of the wraparound services along with advising, career counseling, understanding the job market that's out there for them and what that all means for them to be successful. At the end of the day, you know, our goal is to help all students be successful. And for some, it may take a little longer. For some, it takes a little longer than 6 years, which is what the data suggests. What we're wanting to do with this program is push that data aside and really impact them more immediately and get them to that finish line much more quickly.
And Greg, as Dr. Avendano said, in this pandemic, community colleges have become even more important because students can get their skills on a fast-track basis or learn a new skill, change careers. We're about to have a First Lady who's a community college professor. And so community colleges have really stepped to the forefront in the midst of these challenging times.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, and if you look, one of the goals that we really strive for at our company is to really celebrate diversity and inclusion and to have a workforce that reflects the community that we all live in. So when you have a college like Florida State College with its multiple campuses that can reach out to so many in our community and they're embracing new technologies so they can teach students online, they can really reach into those populations. And with our 8,000 associates working here in Jacksonville, we want a healthy pipeline of young people that match our community, that are folks that we can bring into our company. You know, we put a strong emphasis on hiring through our targeted towards a minority population. And we start all of our folks with a wage of $20 an hour. So we think that's a living wage. We think that that young people that have strived to work hard to get a job should have a living wage. So working with Florida State College is really kind of our perfect partner, what we're trying to achieve here in Jacksonville.
So with all of that said, Dr. Avendano, how can prospective students access this new opportunity?
So what we're looking to do, we're in the process right now of establishing the staff that's going to be in this program. We've identified a number of the programs, as I mentioned earlier. We hope to do, you know, we've had the announcement, the PR aspect of it, the importance of that. Now we're going to structure the outreach into our community. So what I would ask our community is to be on the lookout. We will be very intentional of letting people know how to access this program. The fact that Bank of America is making this possible for everybody in our community. And we will put out a marketing campaign related specifically for this so that they know that they're entering into a program with positive outcomes and an intention of helping them graduate and be successful in our community. So I would expect that to kind of roll out in the next month or two. And we'll get that in line for hopefully as early as the start of the summer term, if not before.
All right, some good news to start off the new year. Thanks, guys, for being with us. John Avendano, PhD, president at FSCJ, and Greg Smith. He's Jack's Market President at Bank of America. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
And in a moment, local social media star Dante Palmer, now an author. We'll look inside his new children's book and his movement calling for gender parity in parenting. That's after this.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com. Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and services tailored for active retirees. Information at vickerslanding.com.
On Wednesday, pro-Trump extremists overtook the U.S. Capitol grounds, suspending the certification of President-elect Biden's win and interrupting the peaceful transition of power. Presidential historian Sharon Conrad joins us to talk about this unprecedented event in American history and about the role presidents play in American race relations. That's next time on Think.
Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, Lawrence Wright talks about his article in The New Yorker titled The Plague Year. It examines the mistakes and behind-the-scenes struggles that so far has led more than 20 million Americans to be infected with the coronavirus. He's also the author of a novel about a pandemic that he started writing before COVID. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Hi, I'm Jen White, host of 1A. But this isn't my show, it's yours. It's a place for all of us to talk and ask questions about news and issues that matter most to the nation right now. And you get to shape the conversation by sharing what you know. Let's keep talking next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville dad Dante Palmer became a viral sensation a few years ago when he posted a picture of himself in a local men's room trying to change his son's diaper. The bathroom was for the guys. It had no changing table, so Dante had to squat down and throw his baby across his knees to change the diaper. Since that time, Dante Palmer has become an advocate for more equitable parenting duties for men and women, and in our public spaces, too. He's also out with a new children's book. I spoke with him.
Hey, Dante, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, definitely. Thank you for having me this morning.
Well, you've been a busy guy. You first went viral, gosh, it's been a year or two ago, when you posted a picture of yourself trying to change your child's diaper in a men's room somewhere, and there weren't changing tables for men, and you were a little upset about that. Really? And you used the hashtag squat for change. That kind of took off, to say the least. And so since we last talked to you, it seems like a lot's been happening in your life. What's going on?
Absolutely. So it's been a two-year journey, an exciting journey, just building and growing. And this year has been challenging for everyone with this whole pandemic going on. But I actually sat down with my family and said, you know what, let's try to find a silver lining in this pandemic. We have a lot of time together. We have a lot of time at home where we can't go out and do anything. This is a perfect opportunity for me to start working on some projects that I always had in mind, and that was writing a children's book. So I sat down for the writing. So for 3 months, writing and looking for publishing companies and illustrators, I went nose in to finish a project, and we created Adventures with Liam and CT. And my first children's book, I'm a first self-published author. I'm so excited about it. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're here, just having a children's book that can teach parents to how to help train their toddlers when it comes to the potty training issue. So I'm so excited to be an author of a child's book to read to my son every night, who's so excited to see himself as a superhero. And it just makes me happy as a father.
And the title of the book is?
Adventures with Liam and CT.
Aw. So the book's out now?
The book is definitely out now for pre-sale. So if you go to squatforchange.com, it'll prompt you to order a book. And a book is only $12 right now for pre-sale.
Okay. So on the website, we learn about you and your family, the book, the message you have for not just dads, but society, really, that we need to recalibrate gender roles so that we appreciate that dads are just as involved in all the things that go into raising kids as moms. That's really the message, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm actually sitting down right now and drawing that message up even on a deeper level, because I have my first TED Talk in April, and I'll be speaking about the narrative of fatherhood. What does it mean to be a father? And that's everything that moms do plus more. And my wife and I sit down and talk about it. We are shattering those gender roles. You know, my wife cooks, I cook. She changed diapers, I changed diapers. So we are trying to, especially me as a father, is trying to show the world that fathers do a lot more than just going to the, going to the house. I mean, going to work from 9 to 5 to work. That's not who we are. We are caring. We are providers. We are nurturers. We just want to be shown as the people we are.
Now, Pampers has taken note of your message. Is that right?
Yes. So we have partnered in the past, and we're currently working on new endeavors now. And they, agreed to putting 5,000 changing tables in America and Canada over last year and this year. So we're still working on that, trying to get those changing tables in those restrooms. So I'm just so honored that major brands had hopped on board, Squat for Change, to get our mission solved.
Yeah. Well, and what do other dads and moms say to you when they come up and talk to you about this? What do you hear from other parents?
Man, they just are, it's nothing but positive affirmations. They're so proud of, I'm that guy, just knowing me as a person. So, like, some parents come to me because they know me personally, and they say, no, there's no fathers out there that's fitted for this role more than I am. And they're just so honored to hear parents say that. Some parents who don't know me, they just want to learn from me. And sometimes I don't even feel as though I have all the answers, but I have these parents coming to me seeking those answers. And I try my best to find out, to try to solve their solutions. And I'm just so honored to be a part and have this platform where I can give my life, my soul, and my passion to fathers and moms out there who are seeking advice how to be better parents on their own.
So check it out, parents, at squatforchange.com. Learn about Dante's story, and you can get his book. Especially if you're potty training a child right now. This is a great gift for parents that are potty training. Adventures with Liam and CT. It's available at the website, also on Amazon. A new release, and kudos, Dante. We're past the potty training years in our house, but man, we remember it. So,
but if you know anybody who's doing that potty training stage, just buy the book as well, and just support somebody else, and in their journey, because it is a tough journey. I'm still dealing with it. And I want to pull my beard off some sounds. I'm so excited. I want to change it for the world.
I feel you. I know how tough it is, speaking as a mom, too. So congratulations, Dante.
Thank you.
Keep in touch.
I appreciate you so much.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. You can catch our podcast up later today wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.